It's at the letters for Friday, February the 17th, a special bonus edition of At the Letters on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. My name's Arden Zwelling. I'm joined as always by my co-host, Ben Nicholson-Smith. We're not going to bog this thing down with a long intro. We're going to get right to it because today we have a very special guest in the studio. He is an eight-year Major League veteran, 16 years as a professional player between the minors and the majors. He played for the Atlanta Braves, Washington Nationals, Philadelphia Phillies, and probably one of the most notable Canadian national team players in the history of Canadian baseball. Pete Orr, second baseman, is going to be in studio with Ben and myself. We're going to talk to him about everything from his career to his new career as a scout for the Milwaukee Brewers and him being a member of the upcoming Team Canada entry into the WBC next month in Florida. So we're going to talk to Pete about all that. It's going to be a great discussion. Bonus episode of ATL. Thanks for listening. Without further ado, here is our discussion with Pete Orr.
Throw over behind, and the ball gets away. Huff throws the ball away, and now the runner comes around. Strong smoke. He will score. Peter Orr moves up. Peter Orr is coming around. He will dive in. He is safe. Team Canada wins the gold medal on home soil. They defend the gold medal in unbelievable fashion. A throwaway ball by David Huff, the pitcher, and both runs score. Team Canada, you have defended gold again on your home soil.
Pleased to be joined now in studio, Richmond Hills' own, by way of Newmarket, Roots of King City, veteran of 15 years in professional baseball, several in the majors with the Braves, with the Washington Nationals, and most recently with the Philadelphia Phillies, Pete Orr. Pete, how's it going, man?
Pretty good. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for coming in. We wanted to bring you in because you're going to be part of Canada's entry into this year's World Baseball Classic coming up. You guys are playing in Miami. It's in about a month. You're in a pool with the United States, Dominican Republic, and Colombia. And if I'm correct, you playing in this tournament, you will have played at all four WBCs, yes?
Yeah, all four. And Justin Morneau and I have done that. And I think there's a couple of Puerto Rican guys that have done it too. But it's been an honor every time, and it's been fun. But hopefully we can have a better result this time than we have all the others.
That's exceptional. All four, like I would think, not just for Canada, but for any country to have played at all four. That's pretty special, man.
Yeah, well, it's been an honor, and obviously, you know, the just numbers-wise, there isn't as many Canadian professional baseball players as there would be from other countries, so that probably adds into the me being on the four rosters, but it's a great group, and I don't know if you've talked to people at Baseball Canada. They always talk about family and how close everybody is, so it makes it even more special being with the guys and being a part of it.
So I'm very interested in the preparation for this tournament, because after playing for basically your entire adult life, last year you weren't playing affiliated ball. So what's the preparation like to try to get ready for this tournament?
Well, I was real nervous about that actually. And when I talked to Greg Hamilton, who's the director of Baseball Canada, last spring, so my first spring I didn't go to, and we talked a little about retirement and moving on and opportunities outside of the game, and he brought up the WBC, and I was like, well, but I'm not playing. And then and he said, well, you know, if you treat it as though you're getting ready for another spring training, the timing of it might work. And I kind of said, well, we'll see what happens, assuming there'd be other guys to that would eliminate me from the team, I guess. But you know, as the summer went on and talking to him, he kept bringing it up. And then in the fall, I guess he needed a commitment from me. And we both just realized that, yeah, if I treat it as I am getting ready to play another season and go through the winter like I'm getting ready to go to spring training, then it'll be pretty much normal, which in a way it has been. Obviously, some stuff's been a little different for me as far as lifting. You know, I'm not lifting to survive a season. I'm lifting to not get hurt almost and survive these games and get stronger, but not through 162 games.
Greg Hamilton's the director of Baseball Canada, and I think he's going to be the head coach of the team, right? Or he's,
well,
he's involved in the
coaching staff? He's on the coaching staff. Ernie Witt's the manager. And Greg will be, he'll be on the bench, almost serves like a bench coach. You know, he's there, throws BP at ground balls during batting practice and stuff. But he's a great guy, and it's a pleasure to have him around.
So, you know, playing baseball is, it's not quite like riding a bike where you can pick it right back up, I would imagine. I've not done it myself, but I would imagine. So what's that process like? What have you done anything differently to kind of get back in that groove?
Not much. I mean, I played this summer. This is embarrassing, but I played this. I got a call from Adam LaRoche last April, right after spring training ended, and a text, and he said, "How's retirement?" I was like, "Oh, okay." He's like, "Do you want to play again?" I was like, "No, it's over." And I'm like, "What?" And he's like, "Yes, you do." And he's like, "I'm putting this team together, and we're gonna play in the NBC World Series, which is basically like a college summer World Series, or like an amateur World Series, basically."
Was this like right after his like whole spring training
drama?
Was
when he's texting me.
Yeah.
Because we came up together with the Braves and played in Atlanta a bit, and we're close friends. And so anyway, he's like, "It's in July." He's like, "You're in." I was like, "No, I'm out." he's like, "No, we need you." And then he started listing the other guys that were going to play. And I'm like, "Holy smokes." Like, now I'm wondering why you're asking me, because you got this list of all-stars and then me. Well, like, our pitching staff was Roger Clemens, Tim Hudson, Roy Oswalt, Josh Beckett, Brad Penny, Jason Marquis. I know I'm leaving people out. They're not going to hear this, so they might be mad at me. And then LaRoche played first, Uglas second, Brandon Inch third, Jack Wilson played short, J.D. Drew, and the Knicks, Lance and Jason Nix, myself, Ryan Langer. It was just... It actually turned out to be a whole group of my friends
that
awesome. I played with. But
what was this tournament?
It was called the NBC World Series. And it's basically you know, those college summer leagues?
Yeah.
Their final championship is in Wichita, Kansas.
Right.
And it's a tournament. I guess the numbers were dying as far as attendance. So they were just trying to, Nate Robertson and Adam LaRoche are Kansas guys, and they were trying to get the attendance numbers back. So they put together a MLB team to we got an advance all the way to the finals, which some coaches were actually mad at us for that. We're like, "You kidding?" But anyway, I said I'd play, and then I'm like, "Well, I gotta do something, get ready." And I was like, "What am I gonna do?" And I found myself going to a mini putt batting cage and ready to get out and hitting. And then I was like, "What am I doing?" And I remember this mom came up with her boys and looking at me like, "What's this old man doing hitting the cage?" And I just had to leave. And then I'm leaving, and the guy was running. Was like, "You still got 10 minutes." I was just like sprinting in my car, like, "I got to go."
Trying to escape.
Yeah. This is in Richmond Hill, right?
It was in Aurora.
In Aurora, with the soccer moms and bringing the kids in. Yeah.
So it's So anyway, the preparation for this has been a lot smoother than that. But I basically just treat it like I'm getting ready for spring training and ready for another season. But it'll be a quick one.
Have you faced live pitching yet, besides the batting cages, like any BP at all, anything like
that? Well, we take BP, we throw BP to each other, but I haven't faced a pitcher. That's going to be the most difficult thing. I am going down here next week or so, and we'll get some stuff in before we actually play some exhibition games with Team Canada, and it's real quick. And then I think the team's only together for 3 or 4 days, and then we play Dominican, I think, that first game. So it happens really fast.
I'm still fascinated by this tournament. How'd you guys do?
Thank goodness we lost in the semifinals, because guys were just hurting. Like the last game, I was playing center field, and Brad Penny, I looked to my right, and Brad Penny's playing left field. Yes. Oh, my gosh. And then Marquis had to pitch, and then after he pitched, he had to come out to left field because all our outfielders were going down. And then I sat back and I thought about it. I was like, you know, it's not that these guys chose to retire. Like, majority of guys out here, other than myself or LaRoche, obviously retired because he just wanted to. But most of them retired because they were hurt and they couldn't play anymore. So no wonder they can't get through this tournament with playing against, you know, 20-year-olds. But
so you're playing against, like, amateur
teams? Yeah, college guys.
College guys?
In college. And then there was a couple teams that had some ex-pro guys on it with some older guys. But the majority of the guys were college players that were playing in their summer leagues.
were they just losing it when they see a team come out with Roger Clemens on the hill and, you know, Brandon Inge is out there and LaRoche, who was in spring training weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, we got, guys, some pitchers that thought they could pitch wind up getting, couldn't, they're like, I can't do it. So we had to find guys, and we got Jeremy Guthrie. He just got released from someplace. They were like, call Guthrie. And wow. Then he came out to Kansas and pitched. So,
that's incredible.
It was fun, but,
it's no, a lot of pressure on you guys in that tournament.
It was, we got were nervous. Big, we were going to suck. And right? Then the first game we did okay. That's what I guess I was left out of the point earlier that, it isn't like riding a bike, but, when your adrenaline gets going and all of a sudden things just click back in. You've trained your whole life. You basically train your body to react to certain situations for your whole life. And it takes a long time to get to that point. But once you get to it, it was fun to have it come back there for those couple of weeks. And hopefully it comes back here.
You just know every team is going to be so up to play you in that tournament, right? Yeah. We want to knock off the big leaguers.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But they enjoyed it. I think the players enjoyed it. And actually some of those coaches, though, they were kind of ticked. Because I guess there's prize money that they're amateur players. They can't get the prize money. The coaches get it.
Yeah.
And we're like, and they were ticked. Why'd you guys get an auto thing to the end of this tournament? Because they have to go through a qualifiers to get to it and stuff. And we're like, are you kidding? And, you know, like Roger Clemens will go sign 50 autographs and that'll pay for your team hotel. Like, yeah. Zip it.
Yeah, exactly. So what are you looking forward to most about being back in that super competitive environment? I mean, the WBC, like you said, is such a short period of time. Every game is going to matter a huge amount once they get started.
Well, what you said right there, the competitive, that's one of the things, you're just so used to it. And competing and having those individual battles, and then also when you're not playing anymore, they're gone. And now I compete with my 5 and my 3-year-old that I'm getting ready for school on time. And it's so I'm excited about that. I'm excited about being around the guys. You hear players say that all the time. It's one of the biggest things you miss. And even if you talk to, you know, my dad was a firefighter, and when he retired, I think the biggest thing he missed was being around the guys at the fire hall. And I don't want to use the term family too much, but it was a second family for me, the baseball world. And, I'm excited to get, have that again, for a short period of time, but it'll be there. But, number one is definitely competing, you know, to try to win and represent, the country that I love and that all the guys that are there love, and do our best, to do well. And we're not here to, it's not a joke for us. We're here to, compete the best we can and do some damage.
You mentioned, you know, family of the baseball world. I feel like every time I'm around the Baseball Canada guys, it feels like there is such a camaraderie, especially with kind of some of the guys who've been with the program for, you know, 10 plus years, and there's going to be a few of them at this tournament. So you guys really do have a tight bond.
Yeah, we're different, right? Because like I said earlier, there isn't the numbers. So a lot of times it's the same group of guys. Like I look to that Pan Am team, that we won the gold medal, you know, in November of that same year, we went to Taiwan and played in a tournament, pretty much the same group. So you become really close, because there isn't the numbers, you know, you could have guys in AAA, you can have guys in A ball, you can have guys playing in independent league, and we're all representing Canada and we don't care.
Right.
And nobody looks at it, as an angle, you have to be a prospect to play, and not to knock other countries, but like a USA, for those tournaments, they usually put together the list of best prospects, you know, because they can't use major leaguers for those tournaments. And it is family and it is fun.
Just looking up the roster, you know, it's names that you're going to recognize if you've, you know, been following Canadian baseball: Jamie Romack, Rene Tassani, Justin Morneau, you know, yourself, Scott Richmond. And then some interesting names: Eric Gagne back in the fold, Ryan Dempster back in the fold. It's going to be cool to see those guys back on a mound and back in that environment.
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at the roster, I hate to even bring it up, but I think the first thing you notice when looking at roster are the guys that aren't there.
Yeah.
And it's unavoidable you can't just say, oh, don't worry about the guys that aren't there, we'll worry about the guys that are here, because it's just, I mean, the guys that aren't there are, they're great baseball players, so it's hard not to have them. But it is going to be a good group. You know, when I first heard that Dempster and Gagne were back in, I was shocked, of course. But then talking to Dempster at the Baseball Canada banquet, realizing he's been throwing for a year to have the opportunity to do this, you realize that he's in it for the real deal, and it's going to be fun. And, you know, I think Morneau, playing with Justin again will be an honor. You know, I had the opportunity to become good friends with him and represent our country together quite a bit, and it'd be nice to kind of end it out there with him.
He's got something to prove a little bit too, no? Just like the way that his career has gone.
Yeah, and I'm amazed he hasn't had signed yet, so yeah. I'm kind of amazed. I assumed that actually here in Toronto wouldn't be a good fit for him, but I guess it didn't work out. And you know, I know he's got more left in the tank, and hopefully he gets a job here soon.
You got a little inside info, or they're just discussions?
I don't have zero. There was actually a text the other night, and there was zero info. So I got nothing.
You mentioned though some of the guys who aren't on the roster who could have been, and right at the very top of that list, of course, is Russell Martin, who would have been your double play partner. How much fun would that have been to potentially turn double plays with Russell Martin up the middle of the diamond?
It would have been fun, but man, it would have been, you know, it would have been at the same time. It was a little scary, you know, to think that, he's one of the best catchers in the game, and he's so important to the Blue Jays that, it was going to be a little weird for me to see him play shortstop for sure. So, I know he could do it. And if you ever go down and watch BP, you'll see Russ taking ground balls every day. He does it all the time. So, it's something that he has always done with the Dodgers when he first came up. So, he would be fine, but at the same time, it's just, I know there's a lot of fans invested and dollars invested in him being, you know, an important catcher for the Toronto Blue Jays. So it was going to be kind of interesting.
I think that's what it came down to, is they said, look, you got $20 million a year for the next three, and we're going to have you, like, getting, you know, double plays broken up at second base.
Well, not to get technical, but the insurance is separate, right? So right. The WBC has its own insurance company that takes on the players for the World Baseball Classic, and I guess they just ruled him out. Maybe they're like, no, he's a catcher. Maybe it was a fan that was like, right. No, I don't want to let him do it. But
as I understand it, it's because he had a surgery this past offseason, which really screwed up the rates for his insurance. But he was kind of saying the terms for it are so broad, where it could be the same. He was kind of saying, look, I had a knee scope. I was walking, you know, I was running around 2 weeks later. I walked out of the operating room.
Exactly.
But my surgery is considered the same as, like, you know, a hip replacement or whatever, or like an ACL job or something like that.
I think if you get anything done to, you're on a list where I think even the major league club can say no at that point if you had any kind of surgery or something done in the offseason. And the Blue Jays didn't, but I think the teams have the right.
He was kind of saying, like, look, the alternative would have been for me not to get this operated on, and I keep playing on the knee, and then I would have been allowed to play. But I would have had a terrible knee, but I would have been allowed to play. It is kind of backwards. He had a good point, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, Russ was excited for it, and we were excited to have him. Obviously, he's a great player, and it's too bad that it didn't work out, especially the enthusiasm that he was going to bring towards it.
Is there anyone on that roster that you're especially looking forward to, you know, playing? You mentioned Morneau, obviously, to playing with or to seeing. There's some interesting, you know, young kids on the roster. Josh Naylor is there. Tyler O'Neill comes to mind.
Yeah, I mean, we're all close, right? So Tassoni and Romac and I are pretty good friends. And then there's, you know, some pitchers that I've developed good relationships with. Our bullpen is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Like numbers-wise or paper-wise, I guess is the right term. But some of those guys are real close friends. It'll be fun to be with all of them. I guess it's one of the best things about the Canada group is, you know, when we do go places around the world, we don't hang out in cliques. We all just hang out together. And so I'm looking forward to being with everybody, and it's going to be fun.
Have you played with Freddie Freeman before? Because you both came up through the Braves system, and such a cool story that he's going to be part of this team this year.
It really is. It is neat, and I know he's been interested in the past to do it, and it just hasn't worked out because we have Votto and Morneau, obviously, and it just wasn't a fit. But I never played with Freddie. I got shipped out of Atlanta. You know, I think it was the last year, or it might have been the year he was drafted, and he moved pretty quick through the system. And so we have some mutual friends. I was close with Hudson and McCann, who are friends with him and are have nothing but good things to say about him. So I'm looking forward to being his teammate.
Nice. They talk to you about your role at all? Are you the second baseman for the team? Or?
I think right now, when I first agreed to do it, I assumed my role was going to be just a backup. You know, I thought Brett Laurie would be playing and other things. And to be honest, the fact that I didn't play last year, I assumed I'd just be a backup. But, you know, things change. So I think right now, I guess it's to play second. But, well, it is to play second. But when you do these tournaments, you don't care. You just do whatever Ernie says, Ernie is going to happen. And you just do your best to do whatever. So if I'm playing left field, I'm playing left field. If I'm playing third, short, wherever, I don't care.
You guys didn't catch any breaks with your pool. The U.S., Dominican.
No, I sure didn't. Well, and then, like, I was looking at Colombia's roster last night, and, you know, Quintana just, you see that name. It's like, well, what if they start him again?
Yeah, I know.
You could get Julio Teheran as well.
Yeah, so, well, if not to try to strategize what other teams are going to do, but
they're not listening.
You almost wonder if they might do that. So you just kind of wait and see. The biggest thing is it's different. The international baseball is a lot different, especially this term is different because starters can only go so long. So the game's a little different. You have to be more aggressive because you're not going to see that guy again. You know, it's not like let's work him and try to get into the bullpen. Well, you're going to get into the bullpen anyway. So let's try to do some damage here before we get to that bullpen. And it is going to be surprising who they do throw against us, and then same with USA and same with Dominican. I think in the past a lot of teams have just thrown lefties against us just because we're Canada and we're all left-handed, but who knows what will happen.
What is the pitch limit? Is it
I don't know.
Yeah, but there are some little quirky rules like that.
Yeah, there always is, right? And like people have asked me about the World Baseball Classic, and you know, I think it's great because you're representing your country at the highest level, but I think there's some tweaks that need to be done to make it so that we can get the premier players on the field. And to be honest, I think that's the only way it'll really take off from a financial point. I know they probably make money off it, but if you had the best on the best, like they're truly the best on the best, I think people would be a lot more excited about it.
Baseball makes money on everything.
Don't they?
They're good at that. They're very good at that. Well, what are those tweaks? Do you think the timing of the tournament?
I wish I knew. Yeah. Timing, I don't know if there's any good timing.
I can't think of another time to do it.
No, right? This is the best timing. Unless you had to break it down. So you had like a series. So you had Canada versus USA played now and then, and then the final was like the all-star break between, you know, or something like that. I don't know. But I honestly, unless you took a little break in the middle of the major league season, which you're not going to do, I don't know when they'd be the best.
You couldn't do it at the end because guys are banked up. Guys need a rest, I would think, at that point after 6-7 months of baseball.
Yeah. You know what? Position player-wise, it doesn't matter. Position players are fine. We could play all the time. You know, you're going to have tweaks and things no matter when you play. It's just pitchers, and the more science and stats that come out of the pitchers can only throw this much to be at their best is really makes it tough.
Ben and I, this actually reminds me of a debate Ben and I were having the other day. How much time do you think a pro ball player today actually needs in spring training?
Position players.
Position players,
2 weeks, right?
Yeah. Well, especially now because you look at what guys do in the offseason.
Yeah.
You know, like, as soon as I leave here, I'm going to hit and run and throw and take ground balls. So you're doing that all off season. So when you show up to spring, the only thing you're really getting adjusted to is live pitching. And honestly, that takes a week. And then there's some, you know, kind of things. You let your arm go a little. Your arm, something different about throwing outside. You get a long toss, get your arm a little back in shape. But I think for a position player, 2 weeks. But a pitcher, it's a totally different story.
Do you have a ballpark of how long you think a pitcher actually needs in today's day and age?
I think safely, you know, a month.
Yeah.
You know, give them the month of March, and that way you can work at their pace. There's going to be guys who are going to get ready quicker. The thing is with them, a position player can do all that work that we talked about in the offseason. A pitcher can't just throw bullpens from November through February, you know. Yeah. They have to take some time off. And I know actually, like Cole Hamels, for example, I remember a couple of years or my last year with the Phillies, I guess he threw like the third last game of the season. We weren't going to make the playoffs. And then I noticed he's still playing catch the last like 2 days. And I was like, Cole, what are you doing? Like, you're done. Like, and he's like, no, I don't stop. I was like, what do you mean? And he told me that he just throws, he doesn't throw hard, but he plays catch at least 3 or 4 times a week all winter.
Wow.
And then, you know, come December, January, he starts to ramp it up. But he said it just his arm feels better, that he keeps I guess, the juices flowing and stuff moving in there instead of going, stopping and then starting up again. And I think about that, and I think that's so true, because yeah. when you stop, you like, and start it up again, it actually hurts. So yeah, it just kind of keep everything going if you're healthy to be able to do that, of course.
Well, and you were with the Phillies at the same time as Roy Halladay, and yeah. he's kind of renowned for his like almost insane
it is
ethic.
Insane. It's unbelievable. You know, yeah. you'd show up to the field. You showed up there at 6. He's been there an hour and a half already. He got to the field at 4:30 in the morning.
Oh my goodness.
4:30. It's like, what?
And just to do.
And I go to the strength coach. The strength coach for the Phillies my first year was actually a Canadian guy. And we got Donger. And we're like, Donger, do you have to be here at 4:30? He's like, no, I get here at like 4:45. He has like a 15-minute little warm-up he had before he needs me. I'm
wow.
Like, yeah, exactly.
That
right?
is nuts. We want to ask you about your big league career and also about your current gig with the Brewers scouting. But before, I do want to ask about your most recent international baseball experience, which was Pan Am Games. You're sliding into home, an iconic photo moment for Canadian baseball. Is there any way to top that in the World Baseball Classic? I mean, that was such a cool moment.
Oh, yeah. If we win the World Baseball, it'll definitely top okay. that. But it was a great moment. And the picture's great and everything, but I have so many people that I think see the picture and you know, I wish it was all 25 of us right. doing the same thing. And I think, you know, it was a great group of guys. Like, I know I've said that and you're going to hear me keep saying about the Canadian guys, but we really were a good group. And so many guys played a key role in that game. You know, I'm proud that I got to be the guy in that picture, but at the same time, I wish it was more of my teammates there doing the same thing.
If anyone hasn't seen it, it was bottom of the 10th inning. And in international rules, you start with runners on first and second in extra innings.
Kind of crazy. And you very
can,
different.
What's crazy about it to me is you can start your batting order wherever you want. Like you pick where you want in your batting order to start it. Wow. That's what's yeah. So you could start at your two hitter or whatever. You could put your 9-1 guys on base and start at your two hitter.
Wow.
Every inning if it goes, but generally you know you get a conclusion to the game because you got two guys on, right? So
yeah,
bunt and a bloop or whatever.
That's how we won. We put our 8 and 9 guys on, yeah. and then we had our guy. I was hitting second, and Jameson, shortstop. Was supposed to get the bunt down. He didn't get the bunt down. I'm not trying to rip him. I just don't yeah. you know, things happen. And then I got a bloop. It was yeah. just a lucky blooper hit. And then they threw the ball away. So I don't like it for that reason. I don't think it should be. I get how you'd have it in pool play
yeah.
in those kind of tournaments because you don't want to have a 20-inning game where a team wastes their whole bullpen and then, that's you know, fair. They have to play another game. So I get it from that side. But come the medal round, and especially a gold medal game, it was pretty. I mean, we won, we benefited from it, but I would have rather just finished the game properly.
It's like 3-on-3s in hockey or shootouts, right? Like it's
yep.
play the game.
Yeah,
know?
And then the fact they brought it up, I saw something this morning. Commissioner Manfred said that, you know, we wouldn't really imply this at the major league level, but we'd be interested to seeing how it would work at the rookie ball level, and if you think, or at the A ball level even. And if you actually think about it, it could make sense because, you know, I've been in A-ball when you play a 20-inning game and you got position players pitching and everyone just basically yeah. wants the game over with.
Yeah.
But, you know, someone's got to win the game. So I could understand if they put it into play in the minor league level, at that level, at the lower minor league level.
Sure.
But hearing them talk about it at the big league level, there's no chance.
No, you don't want to see it. And even you look at how you guys won. So you got a lefty on the mound, and you're on first, and I think Gillies was on second. Lefty.
No, Gillies just scored. He scored on my hit. Stromsmo was on second.
Right, so lefty pitcher, basically airmails a pickoff throw, yeah. trying to get you at first. Runner at second scores easily. You come around, you hit third, and you're coming home now because the throw from first to third goes wild, and you slide in head first, ball beat you. You should have been out. You got the medal.
It was fun. No, I'll admit it. When
you should have been out.
After the things happened, I was like, I think I would have been in there. And everyone's like, eh, whatever, Pete. And I was like, and then I saw the replay. I was like, oh, jeez.
So you slide in head first. The ball comes. Do you know how, did you like disrupt the ball? Did it hit you? Do you know how that happened?
My hand hit his glove, yeah. Just sliding in. And I remember that. But
and were you coming home the whole way? Or were you like,
no,
your base coach sending you or what?
No, it was, it's one of the big myths in baseball. Everyone thinks third base coach is always sending stuff. The only time, the third base coach actually does stuff like that is when the ball's behind you or in right field corner or something, so you can't see it. So that was the case when I was running to third, but then the ball got away and I just said, screw it, I'm going. And, it's funny. In spring training, I remember that year, something funny happened like that, and I thought I could make it, and I was out by like 10 feet. It's funny that I went for it again.
Were you shocked to get in there or what?
I mean, it was just sort of madness going through your mind. And you're exhausted, and I honestly thought that I was going to make it. Like, no, in my mind, it was 100% just go.
Right.
So it would have been pretty crummy if I did get out.
One of the other Team Canada moments from recent years that sticks out is the game against Mexico. A bit of an unfortunate moment to stick out. You were on deck when that all went down, and if you watch the replays, you're actually kind of the first guy in there.
That's why I got thrown out. That was what I said. First guy in, so I got thrown out of the game
because I didn't see you do anything too nefarious in it. But
I DDT'd Jorge Cantu, but I didn't want to because to be honest, most of those guys were good guys, you know, and I knew a lot of them, so. You know, all of a sudden, the guy who was catching, his name was Sebastian Valle, and he was a big prospect with the Phillies at the time. And so when it all happened and I went out there and he kind of popped up, I was like, whatever, Valle, save it. Like, and I just didn't assume anything was going to happen. Then I remember Rodrigo Lopez, who's one of the nicest human beings you'll ever meet in your life. And his locker was actually like, he was with the Phillies at the time too. It was like two down from me in actual camp. And he came out, and I remember looking at him. I was like, holy cow, like, this is real. Like, he saw fire, and then I remember it was to the right of me where the actual punches started going because our bullpen, one of their Mexican guys punched one of our bullpen guys, which was a huge mistake by them, and then it just went crazy.
It was Matheson who got punched, right?
Yeah, he got kind of slapped.
And it was kind of a knock his hat off type of thing.
Yeah. So he's a pretty strong guy.
I think he was standing there with Omont, I think. You're like two, like 6'6 guys, right?
They were all 6'6. Yeah. The smallest guy was...
Tassoni?
Me and Tassoni and the guy throwing... Jay Johnson, the guy who's throwing the haymakers.
Right.
The lefty, Don Cherry talked about him throwing the lefty haymakers. But
from everyone that I talk to, whenever I run in somebody who's in that, like, I have to talk to them about it. And I hear there was kind of two levels to it. There was kind of like the big leaguers who were kind of like you were saying before, like, all right, whatever.
Joey and Adrian Gonzalez were like holding each other's hand, being like, oh my gosh, what's going on? and that's what you'd want. You wouldn't want. And and the same thing, like, I've been in a bunch of baseball brawls, and I just don't. That's not the way I learned how to express my anger. I play
settle
hockey too, so if it's one on one, that's fine. But I think any time there's a baseball brawl, people get hurt. That, you know, they're cheap shots mostly.
Right.
So I just kind of grab someone to make sure they're not getting my teammate. And if they want to fight one on one, that's different.
Right. But I was going to say there was kind of a second level of maybe minor leaguers or overseas guys who came in and were like, let's throw some hands.
Oh, yeah. It's funny. Like, I played with a guy named Oscar Villarreal. He's a reliever for Mexico, and we played together a long time. And one of the other guys, like, pushed Oscar away, and then he was like, okay, you know. And then he ran back in and kicked someone.
Oh, no.
And then I think it was Lowen. And Lowen's 6'5", 230 something.
Yeah.
So he kind of got up, and then Oscar just started running around. I'm sorry. There were so many funny moments to it.
How'd you end up tied up with Cantu? Was it you just in the middle of it?
I don't know. Yeah. I didn't start with him. I started with someone else, and then I pulled Cantu off someone, yeah. and I was like, that's enough. And then he was like, okay. And then I tried to run back in, and he grabbed me, and then he tried to run in, and then we basically were just like.
And then he had to get DDT'd.
Yeah.
It had to happen.
It had to happen.
Wow. International baseball. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I've like talked to like Marco Estrada about it. He's the nicest guy in the world, and he's talking about being in the middle of that, right? Yeah. I mean, there were some legitimately, like you said, nice guys in the middle.
Well, they had a Savis, which he's a scary guy. So when his eyes went, you know, went like that, that's when it got kind of crazy. But we have some guys that I'd put pound for pound against anyone. Tyson Gillies is, I mean, he probably weighs 185, but he should have been a UFC fighter or something. Right.
Him and Aceves got tangled up. Well, right? That was kind of on the fringes.
At the time, Tyson was a big prospect with the Phillies, and he was going through some issues with them. He just didn't want to get in trouble.
Yeah.
So he threw Aceves down and then just could have just knocked him out, but didn't throw a punch because he didn't want to get in trouble.
Right.
Wow. So much to look forward to.
I would be surprised if that went down. You just don't see that on like an international stage very often, right?
Maybe no. You have. Well, you don't see the actual fisticuffs, but in those tournaments that don't get publicized as much, there's a ton of chatter that goes on between, especially, you know, the old Cuban days when they were actually sending those teams that were really special teams. If you were beating them, they knew how to get under your skin. And
really?
we'd tell each other, like, don't get mad. They're just trying to piss you off. And then all of a sudden you'll look up and you're losing. And I don't know how many times we'd be winning. And then all of a sudden we're freaking out, yelling at them. And then now we're losing. And it's kind of, they definitely knew how to do it.
What would the level of chirping be at a WBC then?
Not much.
Not much, right?
No, not at all. Especially, you know, you're playing American guys. And mostly, like, not just American guys. They're all your...
You know
your teammates or your friends, you know them. But I'm sure later rounds, that we just need to get to later rounds to find out if that speeds up, I guess.
Yeah. So as far as your big league career, 8 years in the major leagues, and I mean some really cool moments, maybe not brawls or maybe not sliding into home plate with the winning run, but some really cool moments. You hit 300 as a rookie. You hit home runs at the major league level. Like what are some of the coolest things that you got to do on a big league field?
Just play, you know, just be on the field with some great players. Getting to the playoffs my rookie year, that rookie year in 05 was really special. And I kind of, not that I forgot about it, but didn't think about it. And then someone did a story about it last month, I guess, in Atlanta. And so they were calling around and interviewing people. And Andy Marte, one of the Dominican guys that passed away there, was on that team. So we were talking about that, but it was an amazing year. You know, Chipper kind of got hurt a little bit. Andrew Jones hit 50 homers. You know, it was Smoltz's first year back starting, coming back from being a closer. And it was just, you know, Frank Coor showed up and was like the next Mickey Mantle there for the last half of the season. And
Cover of Sports Illustrated, right?
Yeah. You know, this is the natural. Yeah. Like, oh, geez, pump is, you know. You know, McCann started taking over as the catcher there. You know, I don't know if people even care, but Johnny Estrada was a Silver Slugger catcher the year before, and McCann just kind of bumped him out. So it was a great group. And, you know, looking back, I'm so lucky to be a part of that team and a part of that group. And obviously we're still friends when talking about what I did this summer. There was four of us from that Baby Braves team that played on that team in the summer. So, but, you know, being with the Phillies too, that I really thought we were going to win the World Series in 2011. You know, Halliday, Cliff Lee, Cole Hamels, Royals. Well, like how can you not win the World Series? But we just ran into a wild card St. Louis team that was hot. And Carpenter and Halliday had one of the best pitching matchups I've ever seen. And we lost, I think it was 1-0 or something like that.
Man.
But
those Braves teams, man, like you played with some great players. You know, you think Tim Hudson would have been on those teams, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think. Yeah, you played some great players. Your first major league hit, not to date you, but came off Al Leiter.
Yes.
Wow.
First major league hit off Al Leiter, and then you get to first base, and there's Carlos Delgado.
Yeah. It was great because, you know, obviously I'm a big homer. I'm a huge Toronto sports guy, so obviously, you know, Delgado was there, even though, you know, I'd gone through 5 years in the minor leagues, and that was kind of in Delgado's prime when I was already in the Braves organization. So, but it was neat. And it was weird, though. I made the team, and it was for sure a shock, I think, to everyone that I actually made the team out of spring.
Right.
Maybe the Braves knew that was going on, but I didn't. And we went to Florida to play, and Marcus Giles got hurt in like the fifth inning. And I was like thinking, oh, man, that looks like a hurt kind of thing. But nothing in my brain registered that I am the backup infielder. So I was just kind of like, oh, no, that stinks. And then Terry Pendleton was like, Pete, like, you ready? I was like, for what? I was like, holy crap, like, I'm now, like, I'm next. So that's a memory for me that stands out that I'll never forget.
You know, your path to the big leagues was somewhat unlikely. You know, you're drafted 39th round by Texas, didn't sign, signed as just an amateur free agent with the Braves.
I guess they call it non-drafted free agent.
Non-draft, because you weren't drafted your second time around, no?
Well, no, I went 2 years, like, I went to junior college, and back in the, not to talk about boring stuff, but back in the day, you could be a draft and follow.
Right.
So the Texas drafted me to keep my rights, and then they could sign you up just like 2 weeks before the next draft. But I guess they didn't want to. I went through that draft and wasn't drafted. And then after my second year in junior college, I thought something was going to happen there, and I was pretty sad and disappointed it didn't.
Yeah.
And then the Braves kind of were like, oh, you know, here you go. You want this? And I was like, oh, no. And I already had school lined up to go to keep playing baseball at D1 or whatever, but I wound up signing.
When did you find the belief that you were going to make a major league team?
Not till I actually did it.
Yeah.
You know, I was never the most confident guy, and it's probably something that hurt me throughout my career. Not that I was didn't believe in myself. I just I wasn't unrealistic, I guess.
Yeah.
And I figured out how the business of the game works right away, and realized that I had a big fight against me, and I just kept doing everything I could, working as hard as I could, and I don't want to use the word grinding because it gets used so much, but I just kept battling, I guess, and working as hard as I can, and didn't necessarily of course I had a goal of being a major leaguer, but I didn't let the fact that if I didn't get to the big leagues or not change the way I approached the way I went about it, and I think that helped me.
We mentioned how good those teams were that you played on with Atlanta. I mean, in your first year, you go to the postseason. That's a team that's in win now mode. What do you think was key to you making that team? You would have been 25 at the time, probably.
I think it was 25 or
maybe even 26.
I would have been 25 when the season started, turned 26, but
that's a bit of a late development.
Well, for sure. And I wasn't, I don't want to say nobody, but I was not a prospect. And I went through all the systems, and I can't believe I actually survived till I got to AAA, and then I had a big year in AAA, and that's how I kind of got on the Braves radar, I guess, or the big league radar. But I think the versatility, they were just looking for we had all-star. We had Chipper Jones, Rafael Furcal, Marcus Giles. They had all been in the all-star game before, and they just needed a guy that could cover those spots. You know, someone that could pinch run. We had Julio Franco as our main pinch hitter off the bench. So a lot of times I did a lot of pinch running. And I just needed someone with versatility. They knew it would be an okay guy in the clubhouse. And I guess Bobby Cox liked me and took me in, I guess.
A lot of guys who debut at age 20, 25, 26 and have had a long minor league career might not stick along that long. And yet you played until your age 34 season. So what do you think allowed you
36 season.
So there you go. So you're playing pro ball for a long time. Yeah. So what allowed you to keep playing pro ball for such a long time?
I matured late.
There you go.
I don't know. I think that is true. I think I was joking there, but I really did. You know, you see it all the time. You see 18-year-olds that are like, oh, that guy's a man, you know. But I think everyone develops at different stages. I still feel like I'm fit enough to play.
You better be.
Everybody,
you got games in a month, man.
And everyone ages differently. And you know, of course, everyone in this market knows that. With Jose Bautista, you know, he's still in great shape, and he's I think he's a year younger than me, or the same age as I am. So it's everyone's different, and I I kind of forgot the question you were asking.
Just
now,
how you stuck around.
I was versatility and I being able to play all positions and be able to run still and play defense and I knew how to carry myself around a team, around a clubhouse. I knew when to just keep my mouth shut or I knew when to listen. I think, you know, a lot of years, on my whole major league career, I was a bench player. And a lot of times a bench player, your best thing you can do is just listen to the regular players when they need someone to vent to and you just be an ear and listen to what's going on with them.
Because a lot of the time you hear people talk about being a good clubhouse guy, and clearly you have that reputation and earned that in the course of a long pro career. What does that mean on a day-to-day level? Is it, like you said, just being that listening ear for someone?
Well, I think the biggest thing is not trying to do it. You see guys all the time, and I've had friends that they're like, oh, you know, I got to be the veteran clubhouse guy. And you're like, oh, no, it just doesn't work. Like, you just be yourself and understand the big picture, I think, is the biggest thing. I've said this before to people that when you're on a team, you have to put the big picture ahead of everything. And you got to have personal goals and have aspirations to be able to do things. But the big picture is what matters most. And as a bench player, it's easier to do that because you're not as involved. You don't have five at bats a night where you got to perform. You have time to sit back and be like, okay, let's have an understanding of what's going on. And that was the easiest thing. Understand the big picture. Understand of what's actually going on with the whole team and. Not accepting your role. You always want to push to be, you know, I was always trying to be an everyday player, but I just kind of, you know, didn't get upset if I guess know your role, but, and just be yourself, I guess. You know, you're either a good guy or a bad guy I found this when I was playing in the minor leagues when I was older. You know, my last year I was 36 playing AAA and people were asking me, you're a leader. And I was like, well, I don't know. Like, I just, you be yourself. And if you're a leader, you're a leader. If you go out there and try to be a leader, or if you go out and try to be a clubhouse guy, it just doesn't work.
I think a lot of guys that are in that position and maybe the roles that you filled, I mean, I think especially when you went to Washington and you were kind of up and down. And then when you're up, you're with a team that's losing like 100 games at that time. the pretty dour circumstances at that time. I think a lot of guys could get bitter in that those situations. How did you kind of combat that?
You should, because if you're satisfied with just being a backup and not playing every day and you're like, oh, that's okay, you're someone else is going to take your job that's got more fights. So you still have to have that drive to compete and you know, I'd love to have taken Chipper Jones's job. You know, now that you're
sorry,
done,
you're on the bench.
Move aside, Hall of Famer.
But guys do get bitter, definitely. And baseball, I can't speak for the other sports, but it is what ruins a lot of players, to tell you the truth.
So how did you kind of how did you deal with that? How did you manage it? How did you get through
The big picture thing, I think never assuming that you're more important than anyone else, I don't know. I guess, you know, you brought up those years with Washington. Those were some real tough years for me because I came from Atlanta, which at the time we were on the streak of 15 consecutive. And it was just a very professional top through bottom. And at the time, Washington was going through so much transition and coming from the Expos, and they still hadn't set up I don't know how to say this without offending anybody, but the front office wasn't where it needed to be.
Right.
And it is now, but it just wasn't a good place. And there was bitterness and some, it killed some of the veteran guys. I think of a guy like Austin Kearns and Nick Johnson, and they were there and they'd put up okay years, but then as it went on, it just wore on them and it just was too much.
What's it like inside a clubhouse where you're losing 100 games?
It sucks. Yeah. You know, I remember coming up when I first, when I signed with Washington, I thought I had a chance to make the team, and I wound up having maybe like the best spring of my life, but I wound up not making it. But, you know, that's the game. See, I went to AAA and did pretty well there, and it got called up, and we had a real good group in AAA. And I got up there, and everyone's like, Pete, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm talking to everyone. And then I realized, like, they'd say hi to me, but they weren't saying hi to the other people
right.
that were walking in.
Right.
So, like, for example, you know, Lastings Millage would walk by and guys would just look at him, not say hi. And I was like, what the heck's going on here? And so that bitterness did just creep in and guys just didn't, you weren't talking to each other. Guys don't spend time with each other. Everyone goes in cliques. When you're on a good team and you're winning, everyone's having fun, everybody hangs out. And I think, you know, obviously I can't speak for the Cubs. I have no idea, but it looked like the Cubs had that this year.
Yeah.
It looked like they had a complete group where everybody was all in and they were all together and having a great time.
Well, people talk about, you know, what comes first, good clubhouse chemistry. Does that lead to winning, or does winning lead to good clubhouse chemistry, right?
Like, it's, well, yeah, both, because you can have the guys that are turd sandwiches, but if you're winning, they're like, yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
I always joke to my buddies, because some guys are turd sandwiches. It's just the way it is, but you can have one. I always tell my buddies, you can have one per team, and then it's okay. But anytime you have multiples, that's when it gets tough.
Wow. So are you a believer that it's kind of, you can't just win with a good group of guys, right? Like it kind of goes, you know what I mean?
No, it goes hand in hand for sure, because, you know, you can still have a great group of guys and not win, but, you know, and you can still win with a bad group of guys. But I think more often now you see when you're winning, everyone's having fun. It's a lot easier to, for example, you go 0-4 and you won the game. If you have an understanding of the big picture, it's a lot easier to swallow. If you go 0-4 and you lose the game, then you're like, that's on me. That's my fault. You're upset. You're angry. You want to do better. You're just not in a happy place. Where if you do struggle and you win the game, you're going to be frustrated, but then, you know, you can take a deep breath and be like, meh, we won, you know, let's go tomorrow.
And you think about the years of being up and down and being, you know, kind of getting the quad A label and things like that.
Yeah, I hate that label. I hate the 4A. When people say 4A, I just kind of cringe.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm saying other people say it. it has to take a toll, especially as you kind of get onto the back nine of your career. You know, you've got two young boys who I believe were born when you were still playing in the majors.
Yeah, they're both born in Philadelphia.
Both born in Philadelphia. So, I mean, that's that kind of that lifestyle of, you know, moving, bouncing between AAA and the majors. I mean, it has to take a toll, no?
It does. It takes a toll on your wife for sure.
Yeah.
But it takes a toll. But at the same time, I hate to bring it up again, but I understood. I understood what I was when I signed with the Phillies. I was coming off a year I didn't get to. It was my last year with Washington, and I stayed in AAA the whole year. So my first year with Philadelphia was 2011, and you know, I thought I had a chance to make the team. And then all of a sudden, I wound up making the team out of camp. But I kind of knew, you know, I knew that situations happened. For example, Utley was on the DL, and I knew it was between when he came back. It was between me and another guy to go down. So you have an idea, and I didn't freak out about it. And actually, that AAA team with Philadelphia was an unbelievable group of guys, and we had a great time, and I wound up just going back and forth. And I think I just always understood. I was able to take a step back and kind of understood where I was, and not, like I said before, not just be like, accept it, it's okay. I was still striving to never get sent down. It's the worst thing ever, but I understood it all the time.
On a different note, now that you're looking ahead, obviously still playing, but then looking ahead to getting involved as a scout, how did that come about for you? As far as
well, it's definitely something I didn't think of at all. You know, I assumed when I was done playing, I'd get involved in the player development side for sure, and I still think I will at some point. But when you have, you know, two little kids and a wife that wanted to go back to work, that's doing something that she went to school for and worked hard to do, you have to make. All of a sudden, I was priority number 4 in our family, so I couldn't just like pack up and leave in February and come back in October again. So I couldn't do the player development stuff, but I had a friend that was in got a job promoted to a higher up job in the scouting department with the Brewers, and he asked me, we had contact before he even considered hiring me, and he was telling me how much he enjoyed it, and I thought, oh, that's kind of neat. I never thought of it that way, and then he offered a job to me or a chance to apply for it, I guess. And I turned it down because I just thought, no, that's not, I don't want to be a scout. And then I sat back and thought about it and talked to my wife and looked at the things I could learn. And I actually got real interested, and I called him back and I said, or texted him. I was like, I might regret turning you down there. And he's like, oh, we're making another move today. You want in, need an answer now. So I went for it.
Awesome. Is it going to let you stay in Toronto? Do you know where you're going to be
Blue
scouting
Jays
out of?
Or? The Brewers are doing it. Obviously, I don't have the experience of how it's been done in over time, but the Brewers are doing a it's area wise. So basically, I do have Toronto as one of my clubs, Toronto, Boston, and then I have five AAA teams, but like almost on Interstate 90, you know, Buffalo, Syracuse, Rochester, all the way to Pawtucket. So it is the Northeast United States in Toronto. So
do you think you'll have to look at the game any differently or watch the game 100%?
Yeah. Because even in my last couple of years when I was watching the game, I started, you know, I've always had a passion for watching people get better. Yeah. And then, so when I was older and they're bringing up these prospects and I enjoyed watching them get better. And so I kind of almost started looking at them as a player development guy. Oh, not that I would go and see like, hey, try this or whatever, but I was almost like, what can this guy do to get better? And you see, or will he get better? And so I guess that relates to it a bit of scouting, but also I have to be able to look at a player and be able to give my opinion and give that feedback to the higher ups and, you know, give them a firm opinion, I guess, on how I feel and how, not necessarily on what I think will make him better, but what his value is now and if he could help the major league club.
What's Pete Orr's scouting report on Pete Orr?
Oh, geez, I don't know.
How about Pete Orr, like 26-year-old Pete Orr trying to make the Braves? 26-year-old,
he tries too hard. Yeah, if he could let his mind get out of the way of baseball, he'd be a lot better. Scouting report on Pete Orr is, contact hitter, adequate defensively, still plus speed, and seems to always give us all I don't know. I don't like talking about myself. I'm like, I can't. I'm just going to
multi-year
deal. Give me somebody else.
Okay. How about Eric Thames? That's a very interesting one for the Brewers and for Blue Jays.
I think it's so interesting for the Brewers. I think, you know, I haven't seen the video of him playing in Korea, so I can't give you a true statement from a scouting point of view, but I think that's such an interesting sign. Yeah. And because there has been guys come over from Korea, and there's been guys do okay, but there's also been guys that haven't, you know? And it is a different game, and I'm going to group Korea and Japan together, even though it's a different league and a little different. But for some guys, it's easy to make the transition. For some guys, it isn't. So, but I think if you look at someone like him, you can't deny the physical ability. Like he's a physical freak, really. Yeah. So, and I'm a huge believer in players can get better. And one of the biggest areas players can get better is mentally and be able to mature into their game, I guess. And at his age, that could have happened here anyway. And it just wind up happening in Korea. And I think the Brewers, there's definitely some excitement to what's going to happen there.
When you're getting into scouting or when the Milwaukee Brewers are looking to hire you as a scout, is there like a test that they put you through or what kind of vetting?
No, I think they usually make you go to scouting school. Yeah. They didn't make me go to scouting school, but,
is it enough that you played, 8 years in the majors?
I don't think it's enough. They need to know if you have the ability to understand the game. Cause I'll be honest, I played with a lot of guys that are just good at baseball, but they have no idea what's going on. I always had a passion for knowing the game and understanding players. So I think the hardest part for me is going to be communicating that and writing it down and putting it in a report. Right. You know, I've never had to do that. It's always just stayed in my brain. Or if someone, even like you just asked me my opinion on myself and I start fumbling all over the place. Now I'm all panicked. I'm going to do that when I got to write real reports. But no, I didn't have to take a test, but just the interview and I guess playing as long as I did, word of mouth got around. And the fact I played in the Brewers system for 2 years that I knew a lot of people and they were kind of, there was other avenues in the organization that they were interested in me getting involved in. I just, the scouting one seemed to be the best fit for me and my family.
It's a difficult balance, I'd imagine, as a scout, because this is, it's a young guy's, young kid's kind of life or future career in your hands in a lot of ways. And it's so important to be free of bias and all those things when you're evaluating somebody.
And it is, there has to be a little separation to that. I understand that. But I really saw that my last couple of years with the Brewers. I got sent down to minor league camp in spring training, and there were some young guys there. And they kind of gave the green light to some of the young players to come talk to me or whatever, which I was fine with. you know, they kind of asked, is it okay? And I, yeah, sure. And I got to meet some young guys that were 2 or 3 years in and didn't have a roster spot and wind up getting released in spring training. And I was like, holy cow, like when you're in the big leagues or you're bouncing back and forth, you kind of forget about those guys that go through that. And there's thousands of them every right. year. And it's their life. And it's the people in baseball, you have to put numbers on people and consider them as assets or maybe not as a person, but they are people. And that's one of the biggest tricks. And that's some of the most successful front office people in the game of baseball are able to balance the two and really treat people like people and understand that there's more to it than just the business side of it.
And I think you'd know better than anybody that develop, you know, not everybody follows the same development, right?
100%.
You know, you took a big jump when you were 24, 25, right? If somebody looked at 20-year-old Pedor.
Jose Bautista, I think, is one of the best examples of that. Yeah. And Edwin Encarnacion is another example.
Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, Donaldson. I never saw Donaldson when he was younger, but I have a ton of former teammates that did, and they're like, what the heck? You know, how'd they know that was going to happen?
Yeah.
And some people just have the ability to see that. And hopefully I'll be one of them, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. So on a practical level, do they send you like a radar gun and a stopwatch?
Oh yeah. Really? I got cool. Well, I had to get my own stopwatch, but
okay.
Yeah. They didn't even tell me it was coming. All of a sudden this guy drops it off. I'm like, what the heck is this? And that's, you know, radar gun. I'm like, oh, sweet.
Cool. But,
you know, you get all the gadgets and, there's actually one of the biggest learning curves for me so far, is the amount of stuff you don't even think about, the amount of IT work that goes into the scouting department, the amount of just technology that, you know, I'm going to type in my reports and, well, where does that go? And it goes into these cool things that everyone has access to. And there's so much work that goes into that. You don't even think of that when you're a player.
Right.
You know that scout's doing his work and puts in his information and puts in his hours, but you don't understand the other people that are putting in their hours that aren't necessarily baseball people, but they're just as important as everybody else.
It's going to take a bit of an adjustment to be at a ballpark and not be a player, to be around that environment.
100%. Yeah. And it's going to be an adjustment to see the game. You know, everyone says it when you're a player and then all of a sudden you watch a game from up top, you're like, yeah, it looks a lot easier. So I'm going to keep that in mind. And it's definitely going to be an adjustment. It's going to be an adjustment watching, you know, the lower levels as well. You know, I'm going to be watching, you know, throughout the summer, I'll have to watch some rookie ball games, and I haven't done that in a long time. So it'll be a lot of adjustments all year, but I think the thing I'm most excited about is the learning. Like, selfishly, I'm going to be learning things all year.
Right.
And, you know, like I said before, I don't know where my path will end up in the baseball world, you know, along the way. I think I'll always stay involved, and I think this is something that I have to learn and I want to learn. And I think it can only help me to whether I end up, you know, maybe I'll be a scout for 30 years, but maybe it'll be a 5-year thing. And I'll be able to take everything I learned from that into another part of baseball. I think what we saw in the last, sorry to keep rambling here.
It's fascinating.
Over the last, you know, 15, 10, 5 years, baseball's changed so much.
Yeah.
And the amount of information and the way people view the analytics side of it, has changed. And for a while there was such a separation between, you know, people like me who were just baseball players, or, you know, they would take someone like me who'd go straight from playing to coach, and then there'd be the front office side and there was a disconnection there. And I think the great organizations do have a connection and they all work together and they have an understanding for each other. And so for me to be able to do that, I'm going to have to learn the scouting side of it for sure.
I'd be surprised if you didn't end up back in player development at some point.
Yeah, I think the quote was that when my boss approached the GM of the Brewers and was like, can we offer Pedor this job? And he's like, why would we want to hire him as a scout when we want him to be an A-ball hitting coach or something like that? And so, yeah, I think so too. But I think if I do end up back in player development, this is only going to help me, you know, personally, be able to understand the big picture of everything.
Seems like there are a lot of jobs in that kind of liaison role, bridging that gap of former players like yourself. I mean, you see Dan Heron with the Diamondbacks and Brian Bannister with the Red Sox, and
Yeah,
the Cubs have some guys in that mold too.
Yeah, for sure. And I think what teams are finding out too now a lot is, you know, back 30, 40 years ago, you'd get your great players, and when they were done playing, they just kind of come in and be a coach. Now, you know, the money's changed everything. You know, nowadays that these guys that were successful major leaguers, why would they come coach minor league baseball? For anyone listening here, it's not that great. Trust me, a majority of my life's been doing it. So you're not going to get those big name guys back in. So I think teams are targeting people like me who played a long time and played at a high level in the major leagues, but didn't necessarily, you know, make their retirement money. So not to get into money, but it is a true thing. You got to find people that are able to bridge the gap.
Even major league coaches aren't really cleaning up.
Not at all.
Yeah. Think about pitching coaches, hitting coaches. Like, as a manager, you can do okay.
And it's a tough go to become that. You know, there's some guys that, you know, you look at Mike Matheny, he went from playing to coaching Little League to managing the Cardinals. That doesn't happen. You know, the majority of guys grind it out. You look at, you know, Gibbons in Toronto, he spent how many years in the minor leagues doing all that. You know, I know a bunch of guys that were involved with them in the minor league side and the latter level and loved them there. So you do put your time in. I, from personal experience, I just think of Ryan Sandberg. He's not managing anymore, but when he first wanted to get back into it, he grinded out through every level with the Cubs. You know, managing, went from A-ball, blah, 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 all the way on, and then came to the Phillies. But it took him 9 years to become a big league manager, and that's a Hall of Famer. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, you would think being a Hall of Famer would help. However many time all-star, no dice.
And you see it in all sports too. You see it, like, I find it funny, you know, you watch a basketball game, you see Patrick Ewing sitting like in the back assistant coach role, and you're like, that's Patrick Ewing. Like, what's he doing?
Get in the front row.
You know, and you saw it with Jerry Stackhouse with the Raptors. Yeah. You know, like, he's a great player, and he was
coaching their D-League too.
Yeah. It's something that I think people just assume it's an easy fix, but there's so many there's so many people, and that's the one thing about baseball, that there's so many people, and you see with kids here that, you know, have the aspirations of going to the major leagues. She's like, you better understand that there's millions and of people you're competing against, and they just keep coming. It's not your draft year you're competing against. You're competing with every draft year, every kid, and you know what? If you're not involved, the game keeps going, and people just keep playing. It's the same thing in managing and coaching. They'll always find somebody
else. It's crazy. It's just how much volume, how much competition. It's such a competitive game.
It is, and that's one of the best parts of it, but it's one of the parts that people, I don't think people talk enough about and really understand, that it's, not to bring up Edwin and Encarnacion, but think how close he was to never being what he is now. Right. He was close to getting released and maybe having to play independent ball or something like that. Yeah. Like, it was, you know, so close. And then he just figured it back out again and became obviously the great player he is now. But it is hard. Either Latos, he was one of the best best arms in the National League there for a bit, and now he can't get a job now.
If he had put together a few more really good years, he would have been up for a massive free agent deal.
9-figure deal. $100 million would have been very much in the conversation for him.
And then now he's, you know,
minor league free agent.
Minor league free
trying
agent.
Trying to make a team.
Where if everyone stays healthy, who knows what's going to happen to him, right?
Uphill. People underestimate how much it can be a numbers game. And also, I mean, you talk about how you're not just competing against your draft class, but, I mean, every draft class keeps getting better, it seems.
Exactly.
Like, every generation gets better because they've got better tools, better training, better understanding, better coaching. Yep. They started in a professional environment earlier.
And all of a sudden they're younger than you. You know, why pay you this when we can pay some guys the same thing as you, half the price?
They're cheaper, right? Yeah, they have less, they have less.
That's how I got in, so I can't complain about it. Mark DeRosa, see ya. Pedro, you're in.
You managed to buck the trend, though. I mean, you stuck around for, 8 years in the majors. You know, it's pretty impressive what you were able to do.
Well, I was an insurance policy, I guess, for, you know, I was someone that they could sign.
It's a harsh way of putting it.
But I was, I'd signed to a non-guaranteed contract, minor league contract. And, they knew I'd go to AAA, and they knew if something happened, they could trust me to come up, I guess.
Coming up on this WBC, not to, get dour, but if you thought about how this could be your last kind of time competing at that level.
Oh yeah, this is it. The Brewers were like, well, what happens if someone wants to sign? I'm like, they won't. I was like, do you guys want to sign? I played for you and had good years. Do you guys want to sign me? Right. No. I was like, there you go.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Have you thought about that, I guess, that this could be it.
This is, and you know what? I'm not, you hear people talk all the time about, athletes, getting out at the right time and knowing when they're done. And you know what? That's like what Barry Sanders did that. And like, name another one.
Right.
Part of what makes people athletes and have the ability, we just talked about it, competing, it's such a hard competition. If you're ever thinking you're done, you're already done.
Yeah.
Like, it was amazing to see Big Poppy be able to do that, knowing he was done.
Yeah.
Like,
knowing he was walking away at the end of the year.
Which, because usually when you hear guys, when they say, okay, I'm thinking about being done, that means you're done.
Right.
And I did think, I was like, I knew time just inevitably takes over and you're done. But at the same time, even last spring, I knew I probably wasn't going to play again. But if someone had gave me a good opportunity, I would have definitely thought about it and maybe taken it. So it wasn't.
I heard you had some interest.
Yeah, not good.
Not good interest.
I don't know. But so I guess to answer your question, it'd be nice knowing, like, when I walk off the field the last time, that's it. And it'll probably be emotional because it's a finality thing. But
it's a big chunk of your life, man.
Yeah. So you put everything you have into it. And that's another thing when people talk about, what are you going to do? And this is when I was still playing. I was like, I don't know. I'm a freaking baseball player. Leave me alone. I'm concentrating on this right now. And it's just hard. It is. You're 100% in or you're 100% out almost.
Well, people don't appreciate that athlete mindset where it doesn't matter, what your true talent is or how old you are, where you are at in your career. You still believe that you can, beat everybody. Like, you still believe you can be really good. Like, that belief is inherent in all great athletes. And you could say it's maybe, sometimes it's a little bit crazy to believe those things in the face of certain facts, but every great athlete has that belief.
Oh, for sure. And you don't even have to be a great athlete. Like, if you're, pretty good, you're still having that, And, I play old timers hockey and you still see guys out there, they got that belief. And you're like, what are you doing, buddy? I think Jerry Rice is an example. Like, everyone he knew when Jerry Rice, the last couple of years, like, if you had a kid that only watched Jerry Rice at the end, they'd be like, why does everyone say this guy was the best ever?
Yeah.
Because they'd see him at the end. But Jerry Rice still believed he was doing it, And, there's only, like, I never understood the people that think, he needs to retire now, get out on a high note. Like, what great athlete would want to do that?
No, I hate it when people ask athletes, like, when are you thinking about stepping away? Have you thought about when you might be done or retire? Like, why would you ask somebody who's still in the heat of doing doing the thing about walking? Like, you wouldn't ask anybody else in any other profession that.
Well especially because people just relate it to, like, superstars.
Yeah.
Right? You're related to, like I said, Barry Sanders or, like, a Kobe or something. Like, those are freaks. Like, the majority of us are battling to compete at the highest level. So, to see if should you quit at some point is, it never really comes up in your mind.
One last question. Yeah. Do you have a good Chipper Jones story from your time with the Braves? You would have been on the team with them a couple of times.
Here's my thing with stories. I always get this. My favorite stories, I can't tell.
They're not for broadcast.
But,
is he as much of a character as people?
Yeah, he's Chipper Jones, he's Chipper Jones. But I guess there's a couple of Chipper Jones. I remember one time he came off the field and our pitchers were having time and he's like, it's not that hard. And everyone's looking at him was like, for you?
Yeah.
Like, you're Chipper Jones. Everyone, but he didn't mean any that much harm by it. But I remember asking him for advice. I was like, they're busting me in with cutters. And I just can't do anything with the cutters in. And he's like, don't swing at it. And I'm like, there's strikes. And he's like, so? I'm like, whatever. Like, next, I'll go talk to somebody else here.
Yeah.
But he was great to me, treated me great. And sorry if I'm going too long on this answer here. But
I want Chipper stories.
My favorite Chipper Jones story actually was, so the last day of spring training, before we went to two exhibition games in Atlanta before my rookie year. So I went into camp. I was on the roster, but it was a huge long shot for me to make the team.
Yeah.
And it came down to the end, and I think Chipper didn't think I was going to make it, I guess. So he pulled me aside and was like, you know, everybody likes you and you've done a great job. You just go down AAA and keep doing it. And I'm thinking, and I was like, well, somebody else just told me I made the team. I was like, hey, maybe Chipper knows something I don't know. So he's giving me the whole pump up speech to make me feel good. And then I'd actually made the team. So
did you guys sit next to him on the bus?
Oh yeah. Right, he felt pretty funny after that.
Wow.
Yeah. But Chipper was great. He took liked the young guys, and brought us all in and invited us to do stuff. And I think he needed it too. He's someone that needed to be around the young guys to keep his spirit going and his passion for the game.
He's got to be up for the Hall of Fame soon, right? He would have finished.
It might be this coming.
Might be this year.
Might be a year from now.
Yeah.
First ballot, you think?
Oh, I would
easily.
I think so. I don't know his exact numbers, but one of the things Chipper did is he walked so much that he didn't necessarily hit all the homers because he just wouldn't swing at bad pitches. Like what he told me.
Don't swing at the cutters.
He just wouldn't swing. And you'd see Chipper come up. He'd be sitting on like a down and away sinker, which whatever, no one would do that. But he had the ability to do it. And he just wouldn't swing until he got that pitch. Yeah. So it might be a 2-2. And I couldn't do that. I never had the courage to do that. So he'd wait till 2-2 and then sure enough, he'd hit a double in the gap or hit a home run on that sinker that he just waited for the whole time.
It's easy for him to say when, A, he's got the ability that he does, and B, he gets the strike zone that he does, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And you know what? He had the best strike zone ever because if an umpire did make a mistake and it cost him, he would let them know. And he didn't care about the fine he had to pay, and he was always right.
Right.
So I'm sure the umpires started to hate him a little bit, but he was so exact with it. Just wouldn't swing if it was one where he wanted, and that was such an ability I did not have.
If you don't go after that pitch enough times, then the umpire starts to believe, oh, it must be a ball. If Chipper Jones isn't going after it.
Yeah, it's Chipper Jones.
You know? Just to follow that up, he is eligible next year, and in 2008, he somehow had a .470 on base percentage. So that goes to your point about him just laying off bad pitches.
Yeah, did he win the batting title that year?
Yeah, he won the batting title, hit .364.
Really?
Yeah.
That's like back that. Half of his career, too.
That's like Larry Walker.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's... He was so good. Like, he didn't even take... He didn't even warm up for the game.
Really?
Like, his warm-up throws were the ones in between, like, when you run out to third and he'd throw, like, three. Jeez. Like, how do you, like, I just don't get it. Some people are just better than others.
He's stuck at third and right till the bitter end, basically.
You know,
right?
All that, like, they tried to make up. And, you know, I see it, hear the same thing with Batista. And and people are trying to knock his defense. I'm like, are you kidding me? I was like, give me someone, name another guy that can play right field that has the potential to put up those numbers and then give me their defense.
Right.
Like, that's like, it was almost frustrating to hear. That was like the popular thing last year was ripping his defense.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, whoa. Like, hold on here.
It still is, man.
Yeah. But it's just, you know, people got to talk about something. You got to nitpick. But at the same, like, I would always like to see, like, name someone that's going to put up better numbers than him and then see how they play defense.
Right.
You know, other than Mike Trout or Cargo or
something.
Yeah. Yeah. But
any kind of minor hit you take defensively, you get a massive boost offensively with what he does at the plate.
Oh, for sure.
Kind of what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I tend to look at baseball sometimes. You can go position battles and see and compare teams. You'd be like, okay, let's compare. You can either do position or place in the lineup. And I think, you know, Jose Bautista is going to win most of those battles when you line him up against the guys you're playing against.
If he's healthy, man, he's going to have a year, I think.
Yeah,
I think he's going to go off.
I think I do too. I think he's got everything lined up for him to have a good year, including is the passion to prove some people wrong, I think.
How do you scout this Jays team this year?
Well, I actually have to. Yeah,
since
so
we
I
have
can't
a,
indulge too much, or I'll get in trouble. But no, I think they have a great opportunity. Anytime you have a starting staff like that, that's pretty special. And they seem to obviously they showed last year the ability to stay healthy. And I really like the I don't like because I'm a Brewer, but for the Blue Jays' sake, those acquisitions, Howell and Smith, were big pieces that they brought in that I'm not sure everyone really understands how important those guys will be. Those guys are proven guys, and yeah. I've faced both of them, either at the minor league level or the big league level, and they're just quality pitchers. And you know, they're not going to be perfect. There's going to be days that they might give up some runs, but I really love to look at baseball from a manager's perspective. And if I was a manager, I've had no problem putting those guys in.
What's it like facing the arm slot with Smith? I guess as a lefty, you might
lefty,
be all
right. You think. Yeah. It's surprising actually, because you think it's going to be easy, and that was one of the things when I faced him, he was just coming up with the Mets, and it actually got on you a lot quicker than you thought, and that's right. One of the things that made him successful. And he's not just a sidearm guy; he's actually he's got good stuff.
Yeah, he's still throwing hard.
Howell too, good stuff from him. So
yeah, Howell's like a trick. He's tricky, and like there's something about it that just it's hard to hit.
Throws a ton of curveballs.
A ton of everything.
Which, that's not, you don't like that as a hitter. You're looking
it
fast.
It depends. If a curveball sucks, I'll take it.
Well, yeah.
Little hanger.
Yeah. No, you know, 99% of baseball players love hitting the fastball. So, you know, he's definitely knows what he's doing out there and has the ability to get hitters out. And that doesn't have to be through a strikeout. It can be through contact, too.
Well, hey, good luck at the WBC. When are you heading down?
I'm heading down February 26th to go.
You guys having a camp somewhere?
Well, the Team Canada team doesn't meet till the 5th, but gotcha. I have Brewers obligations ahead of that. So I'm looking forward to those. Really looking forward to those.
And then you guys, is your camp's near Dunedin? Or no, you're playing a game against the Jays?
We're in Dunedin, I think. But really it's just one, we'll be based in Tampa and play. I think we practice one day, play two games, and then we go right to Miami and get her going.
Sweet. Well, we'll see you there. Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in, man.
No problem.
Thanks, Pete.
All right. Our thanks to Pete Orr for joining us. Pretty good chat, Ben.
Great stuff. Great stuff. Thanks to Pete for that was awesome. A lot of fun.
No, lots of great insight from Pete. Interesting, hearing him talk about kind of the mental side of being a player.
Yeah.
Some of the confidence, the belief, stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of you kind of get a side of a baseball player that you don't often see when you're kind of bogged down in the world of stats and, numbers and rosters and things.
Even just hearing what it means to be a good clubhouse guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, the guy who tries to be a good clubhouse guy probably isn't. I find that interesting.
Maybe that's the one way to quantify the intangibles. Like, are you trying to be a good clubhouse guy? All right, you're probably not.
Exactly.
Are you not trying? Then you are. Great stuff from Pete. He'll be obviously at the World Baseball Classic with Team Canada next month before he continues on in his baseball life as a scout with Milwaukee Brewers. Sounds like we'll be seeing him at the Rogers Center.
Yeah, it sounds like a really cool job too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm going to be hitting him up for all kinds of inside reports.
Anonymous scout.
Whatever I say. Yeah, exactly. National League scout said, and hey, look, if the Blue Jays and Brewers pull off a trade this year, you'll know. That guy was right in the heart of it.
Yeah.
Gord Ash down at the Rogers Center quite a bit too. He's in the Brewers front office. So the Brewers are going to have a strong presence watching the Toronto Blue Jays this year.
It's a good thing too. The home opener for the Toronto Blue Jays will feature the Milwaukee Brewers.
That's true.
Isn't that weird?
It's kind of a weird schedule.
Yeah.
They start with two games in Baltimore, and then they go to Tampa for three or maybe even four, and then they come home after having played like six games in two series to open against the Brewers, already more than a week into the regular season.
Yeah.
It's a weird schedule.
It's a different one.
Weird schedule, interleague play at the home opener. But hey, man, it's home opener. It's going to be rocking. I think it's like a Tuesday night. Still be a lot of people there. Big time sellout. All the fans going crazy. They'll probably raise a wild card banner.
As they should.
I know people are going to, and we should wrap this, but I know people are going to crap all over the Blue Jays for raising a wild card banner. No, you won a thing. You made the playoffs. You know how hard that is? You raised that banner.
And
put it up. You celebrate that.
I understand that there could be a bit of a different feeling if they lost that game, but they made it to the ALCS. They had a good year. They had a year that should be remembered.
Yeah, man. This is it's weird. We don't talk about this team as if they went to back-to-back ALCS, like American League Championship Series. They did.
They're good. They were good.
They were, and
they look like they still are.
I think they still are. We'll sort out whether the Blue Jays are good or not as we continue doing at the letters during spring training on sports.ca and on iTunes. We'll be with you Tuesday next week right before Ben heads down to Dunedin. Hopefully we've got some stuff to talk about. We haven't talked to Matt Latos yet, so we'll probably talk about him then. And who knows what else will happen over the weekend. And, you know, the full squad will be in camp by next Tuesday. So I'm sure we'll have some things to discuss, some commentary perhaps from certain players. Who knows?
Big things ahead.
Big things ahead. So, yeah, we'll see you next Tuesday, and we'll see you throughout spring. Our thanks again to Pete Orr for coming in and talk to us. Our thanks to producer Sam McKee at Sam A. McKee on Twitter. Ben's on Twitter at B. Nicholson Smith. I hope you enjoyed this bonus episode of At the Letters. We'll talk to you next week on At the Letters.